Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. Today we discuss birds. Rich Guthrie is here. He comes about every month or so, and we talk all about birds, how to identify them, where they go, what they do, what they eat, what you should feed them. Rich is a veteran birder, a former NCON specialist, and compiler of the Catskill New York Christmas Bird Count for the National Audubon Society. There are always plenty of calls when Rich is on, so get in line early. 1-800-348-2551 is the phone number, 1-800-348-2551. You can tweet us your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. That's one word, WAMCVOXPOP. You can also comment via Facebook at facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Rich, welcome back to Vox Pop. It seems like only last month you were here.
Yeah, it seems. Yep, time goes by quickly, doesn't it?
Indeed. And now we're heading into the mid-autumn and the colder weather. And what should we see out there?
Well, you're right about that. You know, beautiful day out there today. Just a gorgeous mid-autumn day. The colors in the Hudson Valley are spectacular. The sky is bright blue. The humidity is way down. The temperature is right around 70 degrees. That's the weather report.
Yeah, you sound like Cayano. well done. I got to tell you, we're going to hire you.
Okay. But what that means is we're in the midst of that huge change of seasons from grow to slow. And the birds have responded for the most part. Mm-hmm. A lot of our summer friends are well south of us by now.
But we have some winter friends on the way, right?
They're on their way. They're just showing up. And some of them are bringing more friends with them. And we got huge flocks of this year. Some of the winter finches are showing up in huge numbers. The pine siskins, for example.
Is this uncommon?
It's sporadic. It's erratic. Mm. It's somewhat periodic and cyclical in the nature. This is the pine siskins year.
Okay.
And the other ones are goldfinches. So we're getting an influx of goldfinches. Although they are here through the season, but we have the newcomers coming in from the north and northwest. And happy to spend part of the winter with us here.
What does a goldfinch look like?
Well, at this time of year, they're not gold.
No.
They're a bit of a olive green, drab olive, tiny little guy with a drab olive coloration. And they love that sunflower seed and thistle seed.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, don't we all? Let's go to the phones at 800-348-2551. Susan in Great Barrington. Susan, you're first with Rich Guthrie. Hi.
Yes, I'm so delighted to be on with him. I just adore you both.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Woo.
two things really quickly. I'm going to give you an imitation, and I hope you can. I've spent hours on the internet trying to find this damn bird, and I haven't been able to. So, without
Uh-oh.
Further ado.
Okay. All right. Oh, this is exciting. I love this. Okay, I'm ready.
Well, you're the one that prompted me.
Okay. I got this one, Rich.
Yeah, I'll bet you do.
That's a goldfinch.
Is that a goldfinch?
Yeah.
No.
No?
No.
All right.
All right.
Fair enough. All right.
Go ahead. We got two possibilities there.
Okay.
And the first one that comes to mind is, let me try it and see what, and see if you can compare.
Yeah.
Let me see. The whistle's going to go.
Why don't you have a sip of coffee there? What?
How did that come?
Possibly. I remember the following pips being a little bit more staccato.
Okay, that's fine. They have their individual style.
Okay.
And as soon as I get my whistle wetted up here, we'll try it a little bit better. And the other possibility goes like this.
That's another one I've heard.
Okay.
That's not the one in question.
Hmm. Got it. Okay, good. Well, we'll go back to the door on the left, and that would be the Northern Cardinal.
Oh, no kidding.
No kidding.
I thought that they were all the ones that went like that, so they've got more than one call.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, that's their song. You got the call.
Their song goes like this?
No.
Almost like a squirrel, almost like a chipmunk, it sounds like.
Yes, right, a little chipping.
Okay.
But what your whistle there was a good imitation of their song. A little more practice. Perhaps you ought to get out there with them and join their chorus. But that would be fun.
Thank you, Rich. My only other question is I've noticed that robins during the spring seem to stand out in a solitary way by the side of the road,
mm-hmm.
sort of looking out. And I'm just wondering what that behavior is. or if it means anything at all, or if you could just address the behavior. They always seem to be by the side of the road.
I'm trying to picture it. Yeah. Well, if you're talking about early spring when there's still some snow on the ground, perhaps?
Or it's muddy. It's mud season.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. They're looking for the critters that are coming up through the thawed ground.
I gotcha.
Worms and whatnot?
Right alongside the road where the road salt might have melted the snow away and the ground is exposed. And basically, they're looking for food.
Yeah.
And during the spring, they're more inclined to be on the ground feeding. Now, this time of year, we have lots of robins that are still around, but they've changed their ways.
Yes, I don't see them there anymore.
Exactly. And what's going on there is they've moved into more secluded areas and are feeding on berries more than anything else.
So, I gotcha. So
they're into the ravines and the hedgerows and feasting on the dogwood berries or the buckthorn berries. So they're less conspicuous this time of year. But in the spring, they're out there trying to get those recently emerging insects and especially, of course, worms.
Yes, of course.
Of course.
Thank you for clearing up two mysteries, both of you, and I appreciate that very much.
Susan, beautiful job on the bird call, too.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
We look forward to hearing from you next month.
You will.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
1-800-348-2551 is our phone number. 1-800-348-2551. Rich, let's talk turkeys.
Yes.
How is the turkey population looking this year?
From my observations, it looks pretty darn good.
Yeah?
Turkeys are doing very, very well.
And what changed that? There was a time when they weren't, right?
Oh, yeah. There were a number of factors that brought the turkeys down in numbers and over the course of time. One of them was the change of habitat. We went from their happy habitat to a more agricultural setting where they just were not as suited. And then also hunting. They were popularly hunted over the course of time. And
are there limits on hunting? In other words, are there quotas on hunting for turkey?
Yes, there are. There are game limits, and it varies according to which state we're in, New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut. But they're out there. But what's happened is my friends over at the Environmental Conservation Department and turkeys on their own. Worked their way back into New York. They brought some in from Pennsylvania and released them, and the turkeys themselves flew and walked back to New York.
Interesting. Now, Christy, our phone screener, perhaps the greatest phone screener of all time, will often pipe in with a question, and she says, subject heading, crabapple tree, why don't the birds eat dried berries on my tree?
They're waiting for the berries to get better.
Were they sweeten up?
Yes, they do. And here's a story on that. My theory, I don't know if it's fact or not, but I've watched the same thing happen year after year after year. You'll notice that in the spring, around February, March, and perhaps into April, if there are any left, the birds are just downing those berries voraciously. This time of year, they're letting them go. They're going after other fruits that might be out there. But the crab apples and some of the other fruit berries are hard. And I don't know if you've ever noticed as with an apple, if you leave an apple, as I've done many times, on a dashboard of the car in the winter, walk away, the apple freezes, you walk back and say, gee, I hate to waste that. And you let it thaw out and then you eat it.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Really?
Absolutely.
That I did not know.
The constituency changes. It gets mushy, a little soft, so you just have to poke a hole and you can suck the whole apple through the hole. And it's good. It's like a baked apple. And that's what I think happens to the berries, the crab apples on the trees.
Brilliant. Now, unfortunately, Christy is answering calls and probably didn't hear your answer. So you'll have to paraphrase it after the show.
We'll do that.
All right. Fair enough. Now, we have one from Twitter here. Terrence says, another year without hummingbirds. Feeder is under a maple about 20 feet from a state road in New Paltz. Ideas?
Ideas.
Yes.
Keep trying. Don't give up. But there's no shortage of hummingbirds, so maybe relocate the hummingbird feeder.
Could it be that it's the maple tree, it's under a maple? Is that an issue?
No, that's not it. It's some other factor involved.
The state road being close, 20 feet away?
No, that shouldn't be. They do well next to state roads all around the state and the Commonwealth, so I wouldn't think that that was the issue. So there's something else going on there. I would say don't give up, keep going.
Okay.
And in fact, while we're on a topic, if you do have a hummingbird feeder out there, keep it going. Keep it out. Because while most of our hummingbirds are long gone.
Yeah, they head south.
They're gone. there are other hummingbirds that may be passing through. And this is one of the fun times dealing with some of these vagrant hummingbirds. You know how some of them can be.
But they can be more exotic or at least not as common around here?
These could be species from the far west, from the Pacific coast.
Hmm.
Happens every year. Birds of all sorts start out in the Pacific coast. They meant to go to the Baja or to Mexico, and they end up in New York.
They took a wrong turn to Montana.
And these are either the misfits of the bird world, and it happens all the time, or they could be the pioneers of a new pattern, a distribution pattern, migration pattern. We are always on the lookout for this kind of thing. And it's part of the fun of birding, is going out and finding some of these Western vagrants or European vagrants that show up.
So, in other words, keep your hummingbird feeder going. You may be well surprised as the fall wears on.
And if you do have a hummingbird around now, any kind of hummingbird whatsoever, let us know.
All right,
fair
enough.
Because we want to know, and I'll give that information out later on.
You can give us your contact information right now before we head to the break.
Okay, we can do it by email at gaeltic@capital.net. I'll spell that as GAELTIC. At capital, CAPITAL, .net.
Fair enough. Now, you can check in. Now, that was a Twitter question. You can check in with us on Twitter. Tweet us, if you will, at WAMCVoxPop. That's one word. Or you can check in on Facebook, facebook.com/WAMCRadio. Of course, the phone is the old-fashioned way, and we encourage that as well. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Take a short break. More with Rich Guthrie coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Sunflower Natural Foods Market, Woodstock, New York, offering an additional 250 featured items each month, including Nature's Path, Napa Valley Olive Oils, Dr. Bronner's, and more on Facebook, Twitter, and sunflowernatural.com. Dr. Johanan, Capital District in New York City, specializing in occupational and environmental health and prevention, including back disorders, water contamination, new technology, and mold problems, johanningmd.com. FDR Presidential Library, Hyde Park, presenting the public forum, FDR's four campaigns, issues and candidates in his four elections, October 21st, historichydepark.org. Eagle Hill School, Hardwick, Massachusetts, a college prep boarding and day school for students in grades 8 through 12 with learning disabilities, dyslexia, ADD, and ADHD, EHS1.org. And McCabe & Mack Attorneys at Law, Poughkeepsie, New York, representing clients throughout the Hudson Valley for wills, trusts, estates, and elder law, mccm.com.
one 800 348 2551 is our phone number. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Rich Guthrie here for his monthly bird visit. We had a request on the line. We're playing request. It's like Casey Kasem all of a sudden. What was the second bird call you made?
I forgot to mention that. Yes.
What was that?
Well, the first one was the cardinal.
Right.
And the second one is a in many areas around the listening range, we're talking about the white-throated sparrow.
Uh-huh. And could you make that sound again?
Here we go.
All right, here we go.
It's a little wispy.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Wonderful.
Long-distance dedication. Let's go to Olive in Kingston. Olive, you're on.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
There's two things. One is a question and one is something to share that was just amazing. I was in my kitchen one day and I heard a very unusual call of a bird. And I went outside and I looked up and saw what appeared to be a family of eagles. There was one eagle circling and there was two smaller ones diving and, you know, swirling and diving and playing around. And then they, you know, circled around for a while and moved off. And then a much larger one came in and circled around and then moved off. And it was just amazing, bald eagles. I've never seen such a thing in the city of Kingston.
Well, you're thank you for that. You were witness to a wonderful, spectacular part of nature, and that is a family of eagles. They are probably the young just recently out of the nest. Mm-hmm. They are like any teenage kids who are tumbling, tussling, or just having a rousting fun time. And that's what it is. It's all about, well, we call it fun. They call it learning. It's about maturing. And they do. And the sound that they make is hardly an eagle-like sound, not one that you conjure up an image of an eagle on hearing. It's more like, I like to describe it as, sounds like somebody tickling a chicken.
So. And, you know, we've all heard that. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah, it was unusual.
Yeah.
But the question I have is about a different bird. Some bird flew in and sat on my fence for several hours, obviously resting, and then was gone, and I never saw it again. It was a sort of a tawny color, similar to the color of a wood pigeon, but it had black flecks, and it was larger and had a red kind of a, I want to say a slash, like a red crown, you know, color, like a tawny brown red on his head. And I thought partridge, but I looked it up and it wasn't a partridge.
Well, how big was this bird?
A little bit bigger than a mourning dove.
Oh, well, that takes what I was thinking of, puts that outside. I'll have to think
what
about this.
What were you thinking of?
I was thinking smaller, first of all, and tawny brown with flecks and a reddish top to the head would be a house finch.
Right.
But they would be way smaller. They're actually smaller than a sparrow.
Hmm.
So we're not talking. We're into something else here, and I'll have to think about that. Go through that again. What was it all about?
It had the shape of a partridge or a mourning dove.
Yes,
you know, that sort of shape, and larger than a mourning dove, and it had black flecks when his wings were closed sitting.
Okay.
Black flecks down his.
I got it. Here we. What we're talking about there is a type of woodpecker, called the flicker. That has that very pattern that you describe.
He's getting out the Crosley. Hang on,
I'm
just
getting
a
out
minute
the Crosley bird guide, the Crosley ID guide.
For those of you watching on the radio, you'll be able to see this.
Yes, but I'll bring up the image of the flicker, which I'll have Ray verify.
Okay, all right.
Will
hang
look
on now,
something
Olive.
Like what you're describing there.
Right,
are you ready?
See. I'm looking. Okay, so yeah, with the black flecks there and the red crest, yeah, I'm with the bird expert on this.
How's that, Olive?
Sounds good.
Okay.
I was confused by the shape because it looked more like a dove shape rather than a woodpecker shape.
I got you.
But the red crest made me think woodpecker too, but I couldn't think of that a while.
Very interesting. Yeah. Well,
the flicker is a woodpecker that came out of the trees, and they're the ones that like to. Feed on the ground. If you're out there walking in a park or a golf course or an open field, they'd be the ones that would be flying ahead of you, showing a very cottontail-like rump to them so that the...
You can't say that on the radio.
Cottontail?
Rump.
Oh.
Hey, you know, Olive, if you see that bird again, take a picture and send it to Rich, and we'll discuss it and see if he's right next time, okay?
That's great.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Another Twitter tweet, as it were, Rich.
How appropriate.
Yes, indeed. Saratoga Tom on Twitter says, how and where can I see a golden eagle around here?
Good question,
okay.
Tom. I'm glad you brought that up.
All right.
Because now's the time. And if you're in the, if you have an opportunity, Franklin Mountain in Oneonta, New York, from the Albany area and Schenectady and Amsterdam, right down Route 88. Go down to Oneonta, New York, and Franklin Mountain is the place to be to see the golden eagles. They come by there. It has a phenomenal number that streamed through there between now and the middle of November.
And where are they headed?
They're headed to the middle Atlantic states.
Okay.
West Virginia, North Carolina, someplace south. But, you know, it's interesting because elsewhere in this area, you rarely see any golden eagles. Why there should be this concentration that goes over Franklin Mountain on a regular basis. The other possibility, if you're in the Poughkeepsie, New York area, Dutchess County, New York, is by Stissing Mountain.
Mm.
Now, years ago, I found a pair of young golden eagles at Thompson's Pond Nature Conservancy Preserve flying around. And so happens they came back every year since.
Oh.
They matured. They actually built a nest down there. And subsequent generations of the same pair, I'm sure, are returning to Thompson's Pond by Pine Plains in Dutchess County, New York.
Fascinating.
So you could go down there. They're probably not there yet, but through the winter months, you could pull up to the causeway and look up, and you might well see one or two golden eagles, and as well as bald eagles and ravens.
I like it. Let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Kathy in Florida, New York. Hi, Kathy. You're on.
Hi. I have a bluebird that's been coming to my window. He came all through the nesting season, so what I read was he's protecting his nest and all. But he's back, and he's at every single window, and even my attic windows. And I just was wondering why.
Well, he should be over that business of defending his territory. You know,
that's what I'm thinking, but he's, like, really persistent. It's every day. It's kind of fun, but yeah, I was just wondering what's his story.
Is he bumping up against the window or just sitting there looking at himself in the mirror?
Oh, no, he's tapping. He's literally tapping. And he kind of sees me, and then he'll, like, if I move, he kind of follows me.
Oh, really?
So he can see us, because that's what I thought. It's a reflection, but it's not necessarily the reflection.
Maybe it's you.
No, and he's for the whole family,
nice.
You know. I just was wondering, I, you know, it's not like we just moved into the house. Then I would have thought the other owners must have let him in, but we've been here for like 12, 13 years.
Yeah.
And
no,
this is the first time.
Letting him in would be a mistake.
No, I'm not about to do that.
Okay.
Thinking.
Yep, I know what you're saying.
I mean, there's nothing I can feed them because I know they don't eat like the seeds and everything. So
you're right about that.
Like he's not looking for that. I just don't get it.
Well, I don't either. As long as he's not, you know, you can feed them, by the way. They do like, if you get a hold of it, and there's an outfit in Ohio that will, you can buy mealworms.
Yeah, the mealworms. Yeah, but he's obviously doing fine. They had two nestings this past summer.
Okay.
I mean, they're doing fine. I think I'll leave them be.
It doesn't sound like it's broken, no.
Well,
no, but I just was wondering what might be the reason.
Well, it has to be the reflection. And something to do with this bluebird and his reflection. You know, some birds are like that. It's especially, you see that with the parrot form birds, where they will take up to liken something. And, you know, usually it's a real thing. But this guy apparently has taken a real liking to himself. Doesn't know who it is, but he likes him.
An interesting bird. Kathy, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Okay, Kathy. Thank you.
Rich Guthrie is our guest on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. The phone number, Patricia. Where are you calling from, Patricia? I can't
quite. Red Hook, New York.
Oh, Red Hook. Ah, it says Leverock, but I'll say Christy, the phone screener, is doing something odd there.
Yeah,
welcome to the
yeah.
show. You're on in Leverock.
Thank you. I hit Red Hook.
Red Hook.
Dutchess County.
Gotcha. I know it.
I have two questions. One is a birdsong question, and the other is a woodpecker question.
Okay.
I tend to identify birds by their song. I'm not very good at spotting them.
Good for you.
For the past few years, in the early summer, outside my house, I live in a rural area, I hear this birdsong, which I've been trying to identify for 3 years. I'll do an imitation for you.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Okay, hold on.
Okay, I'm ready.
Goes like this.
Sounds like one of Ray's jazz records.
No, I like that.
Yeah.
I know. It's amazing. I can't figure out what it is.
It's a delightful sound. And you did a very good job of imitating the song of the Carolina Wren.
Ah, the Carolina Wren. Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
And it's one of the cheerful sounds that I have out there. And you know what I do? I've mentioned this before, but I like to put up a baby room monitor outside. And the mommy part inside. So I get to hear those sounds when the doors and windows are closed right on through the season. So
Right.
And
early in the morning and the evening are the best times for the bird song and the froggy chorus. So
yep.
I always leave my windows open. That's great.
Well, try
it. Another question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Another question is this. Woodpecker, I don't know what kind because he's fast and I can't spot him, but he's pecking a hole in my house.
Uh-oh.
And I had the house repainted and the wood repaired, and he came back the next year, and same place. Think it's the same woodpecker?
Probably.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and if it's the same place each time, then perhaps you can get back up there and put some burlap over that spot, whatever it is, and that might deter him long enough that he will
look for another place.
Go someplace else.
Or aluminum siding. That's
your neighbor's house, yeah.
Right. Okay, that's great. Thank you so much. I really enjoy the show.
Thanks, Patricia. We appreciate it. Always nice to hear from Levrock. Like a Flintstones episode over in Levrock. All right, Christy, call screener. She's got it now. It's Red Hook, Peter in Rock City, if that is, in fact, really where you're from. Hello,
Peter?
Hello.
You're on.
Okay, this is Peter.
Hey.
This incident occurred about 20 years ago in Great Neck, Long Island. There was a group of sparrows that were pecking at and beating up another sparrow. Somehow, I escorted him into an after-hour banking withdrawal or deposit system, and these little hoodlums were waiting outside, and I was wondering if my interference with Mother Nature was such that, you know, just leave it alone. They you know, this is a destroyed animal, and there's some good reason. Unless it was a Republican bird.
Ouch.
No.
Oh, hey. Okay.
You dirty rat.
All right. So.
Anyway, if you could respond to, you know, the genocide or the birdicide.
Okay. Any ideas? Any ideas, Rich?
It happens. It happens. And the sparrow that I think that you're talking about is what we call the house sparrow, is particularly vicious at times, and they will gang up and beat up on another bird
for no reason, or
not to our eyes. Usually it's competition over a nesting site or territory, they just have that in their nature. It's very rare. I personally have never observed it, but I've read enough instances where it has happened out there. And they're particularly cruel when it comes to things like bluebirds nesting, where they'll go in, or tree swallows. And so they're, to answer your question, don't read too much into it, especially politically, but it is something that is that goes on out there. It's, you know, it's not pleasant, but it happens. And there's no obvious advantage in their doing it other than to cut down on competition. And birds will peck on a bird of that they perceive to be weaker, injured, or out of sorts.
All right, so that's nature. Peter, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, our guest. Stephen in High Falls. Stephen, you're on.
Hello. Yes, Rich, last week I saw three birds of prey, and I was seeing them from above, from below, and they were circling. Dark bodies, light head, and light tail. So
okay.
I thought perhaps they were bald eagles, but it was really hard to identify them because they were fairly high up, and I was seeing them from below, and the light was coming from above.
Well, I bet you're right. I bet you're right. Eagles, of course, can soar at great heights. And one of the things about the adult bald eagle is that dramatic contrast between the black and the white is really apparent at a great distance. It is so black and so white that it really stands out. So I would suggest that's what you saw. And being as you're in the High Falls area, you're not far from very prime eagle habitat, either down at the Ashokan Reservoir. This is in New York State. Or the Hudson River, and they could be shuttling back and forth between those two prime areas.
Hmm. And would there be three circling?
Sure. What happens? That's a good point. What happens is that birds will look for these thermal updrafts, where you get a bubble of warm air rising, and one bird will see another one soaring within that bubble, and they'll move over to it so that they can take advantage of it too, and they get along fine together inside that uplift.
Interesting. Oh, okay. And one last question: were they migrating? Would you think they were migrating or resident, or it's the time of the year? I would think for them the migration.
You're right about that as well, and it could be either way. We have both resident bald eagles that are going between roosting areas, resting areas, and feeding areas, and migrating eagles that are passing through the area. And either way, their behavior will look pretty much the same, except that in the end, the migrating eagles will tend to head in a southerly direction, whereas the other eagles might be going west or east or north or, you know, to wherever their destination may be. So it could be either of them.
Hmm.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, Stephen, you're welcome. Thanks a lot. The phone number to call is 1-800-348-2551. You can also catch us on Twitter at WAMCVoxPop. That's one word, WAMCVOXPOP. Or on Facebook at WAMC Radio. That's also one word. You know, Rich, your description of the bald eagle being very black with a very white head, I just got wondering, I wonder what the evolutionary factors were that the bird had such a white head and what advantage it had in hiding from predators or catching prey that would have made that happen.
Eagles don't have to worry about that. They don't have to hide from anybody. They'll stand out there on their own. They're pretty good at that. The young eagle in the nest is all dark, where they will be inconspicuous. But even a young eagle can stand its own ground.
But if Darwin was right, there has to be a reason, right? Why over the centuries and thousands of years and millions of years this bird has gotten a white head?
Well, the American bald eagle has that white head and white tail. Its very close relatives around the world have similar patterns, but somewhat different. The African fish eagle, for example, has a white head and a white body, a white belly and a black back. And the white-tailed eagle of northern Europe, around through Siberia, as the name suggests, has a white tail, and also a dark head. So these patterns, as they've developed, I think this is where Darwin has, you know, maybe doesn't always fit his expectations, there's not a distinctive evolutionary or survival benefit in a white head and white tail black body.
Interesting.
Because their counterparts are doing equally well with their configuration of those patterns.
Well, that's very interesting. Thank you for enlightening me. Let's take a break here, Mr. Zach. 800-348-2551. More calls with Rich Guthrie coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Baba Louie's Pittsfield, Great Barrington, and Hudson, New York. Featuring lasagna night every Monday with salad and a basket of bread, babalouiespizza.com for details. The Dorsky Museum at SUNY New Paltz, presenting weekend events in conjunction with Dear Mother Nature, Hudson Valley Artists 2012, newpaltz.edu/dorsky. The Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs. Celebrating 30 years of educating children and striving to inspire a lifelong love of learning, waldorfsaratoga.org. And the Hudson Valley Heart Center, providing cardiovascular care throughout the Hudson Valley with services including nuclear, echo, CT angio, and vascular testing to help evaluate cardiovascular wellness. HVHeartCenter.com.
It's Vox Pop. Rich Guthrie, our bird expert, is our guest at 800-348-2551. Rich, you handed me a note in the last break. It just said eagles and hawks. I'm not sure what that means, but tell me about them.
Okay, well, you know, now the topic has come up, and now is the prime time to watch the eagles and hawks in their migration. Mm. And I just want to mention, I did bring up Franklin Mountain in Oneonta,
yeah,
New York, which is a prime area to go to. It's free to get into. It's very accessible. Short walk up a hill, but no problem. Dress warmly if you go. The other couple of places is Hook Mountain down in Nyack, New York. So if you're in the southern part of our listening area, Nyack, New York, Hook Mountain,
okay,
you could go to the Mearns Bird Club website to find out about that location. Or if you're over in the Springfield, Holyoke, Massachusetts area, Mount Tom Reservation would be a place to go, where there are people that are regularly present that will look for, help you sort out, identify, and they are actually counting the numbers of birds and comparing one site to the other and one year from the other.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. Before we get back to the calls, you do have a blog, and it's a very interesting one.
That's right. It's at the Times Union. Times Union. It's at blogs, timesunion.com.
All right.
/birding.
Birding.
Yes.
And Rich Guthrie is the man. All right. So, Andre, okay, is it Westville Brook or Westbrookville? I can't tell.
Westbrookville.
How are you?
Wow. Yeah, where is that?
That's about 2 miles from the Basherkill.
Okay.
On the Sullivan County, Orange County border.
Got it. Okay, Andre. We're on.
Welcome aboard. You're on with Rich.
Thank you. Between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. 2 weeks ago, on a nice, warm, sunny day, a little bit of clouds, I look up and there's a brown, mostly brown, black, horned owl sitting in a tree.
Mm-hmm.
It sat there for hours. I thought owls were nocturnal.
Only at night.
No,
Andre, it's unusual, but there are occasions where an owl will come out and hang out during the day. I'm surprised that he stayed there that long, because the reason why you don't see them is that they are usually hiding. And because as soon as a crow or a group of crows or blue jays or other birds find them, they will just not let them alone. And so the owl want to beat feet as fast as it can back to a pine tree where it will spend the daytime trying to remain inconspicuous as a big owl can be.
Well, this looked like a juvenile because the head seemed much smaller than the body than you would expect of an owl.
Well,
it was an owl because of the horns. I know that is a fact.
Okay. Well, as long as you saw the horns on it, then... And a young owl should be pretty well full size by now. So perhaps it was just the angle of that you were looking at him. But it should be, and it could have been a young bird of the year that was perhaps trying to sort out where he's going to spend the rest of the winter. I would stick with great horned owl that was sitting in out there in the daytime. Unusual as it is, but I've seen it elsewhere.
Okay.
All right, thank you very much, gentlemen.
You're quite
Andre,
welcome.
Andre, thanks so much. Andy in Del Mar. Andy, you're on Vox Pop.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for taking the call. I'm a great fan of Rich.
Thank you.
And I would just add that this morning we got to walk around Peebles Island, up where the Mohawk and Hudson are coming together, and there are just thousands of migrating birds, but among them was an eagle. It was too far away to really see, but its stature compared to all the other birds was breathtaking.
Mm-hmm.
Rich, I have a childhood memory of catching birds with you, actually, banding. And then, you know, I know that amateur and academic ornithologists figured out all these migratory patterns using pencils and notebooks. And I'm wondering how, in the last decades, bird watching has been changed by the Internet.
Great question.
Well, it certainly has. There's so many changes. It's you know, we could do a whole program on that someday, right? All the new techniques that there are for not only finding, identifying, and recording bird information. The best site right off the bat would be Cornell University's site called eBird.
And we've had that gentleman here who runs
Marshall
that program.
Marshall
Iliff.
He's been here.
Yeah.
And eBird is the online way to keep make your bird sightings more informative and useful and to share the information. eBird.org. And from there, you just sign on. You get yourself an online account. Doesn't cost anything. And off you go. And you can find out who's seeing what and where and when and how many and how often. And it's just a wealth of information. This is worldwide.
Yeah. And what have scientists been able to learn from seeing a bigger pattern like this that they wouldn't have from observational data of you going out there in the woods?
Well, for one thing, you can learn about what's going on a broad scale. If you want to find out what's happening with, let's say, the mourning dove populations in North America, you could look up a map of mourning doves and you could see the relative numbers around the country. No, the absolute numbers around the country. And go to, let's say, Arkansas or North Dakota and see what's happening in those various locales.
Very interesting.
And then you could also, you know, share your information and keep track of your information. So you could see where you've seen mourning doves around the country over the course of time.
Andy, a splendid question. I appreciate it very much. Now, we have one from Twitter here. Tom in Colony asks, what are the chances that we might see evening grosbeaks, crossbills, or other such birds this winter?
Chances are good. The predictions are... And this is all, first of all, these are all winter finches, as we call them.
Okay.
And they come down sporadically 1 year after another, and then we'll go for several years without any at all. It's all about food. And if the food crop up north is sufficient, they'll stay put. Mm-hmm. If there's some sort of a shortage or a failure, then they will start to move south to find food further south.
But temperatures aren't, strictly speaking, the only factor.
Temperature is not nothing to do with it.
Okay.
They can survive 40 below long nights up north, as they usually do.
Okay.
It's when it comes to food, they have to beat feet, get out of town, and they show up in our backyards. And it's a cyclical thing. This year, the Siskins are making a big push, and there is a strong suggestion that the Red Crossbills are also on the move. Mm. And usually these things begin to develop well into December and January as the numbers increase.
All right. Let's go back to the phones and Mark and Saugerties. Mark, you're on.
Hello, Ray.
Hey.
And your guest.
Rich.
I can't remember his name.
Rich Guthrie. That's the guy.
Little presque-vu there. So anyway, I have some woodpecker solutions. And only one of them is drastic, but has never caused any harm. If the lady who called earlier was having trouble with woodpeckers,
mm-hmm.
I live on 7 acres of woods, and we have a lot of dead trees, and so woodpeckers love our woods. We leave them alone for the most part, and every now and then we had problems with them pounding on our house.
Mm-hmm.
So the most drastic solution that I again want to assure everybody that no birds were ever harmed. When it was really bad, I would actually go outside and make noise by firing my shotgun. They would scatter, and they would not come back. Again, I never, ever shot any bird.
You seem fairly defensive about this, Mark.
Okay, I know. I just know that people are going to get really upset.
All right.
No, Mark, I'm with you there. I've no problem with that.
That's a common way to disperse pigeons, for instance, loud noises,
yeah,
right?
They do that with pigeons and crows. Yeah.
Okay, anyway, continue.
So anyway... another one, my wife is an expert Googler, and she was looking for solutions online, and she found that hanging mirrors on the eaves of your house also helps scare away woodpeckers. Apparently, the flashing light or the sight of other woodpeckers, on the house upsets them and they leave.
Well, that sounds interesting. That's something you could do with the old CDs that you don't want around anymore.
You know
nice.
What? It's really funny. That's what I said. we went and bought a stack of 50 CDs and we hung them around the house. And it worked beautifully.
Well, you got to do something with the Ted Nugent CDs after all, right?
Yes. The final one, we actually bought an electronic bird call maker.
Yes.
It was kind of pricey, but it's been well worth it. It only works during the daylight. It's got light sensors. It was programmable, and it makes sounds of woodpeckers their calls when they've nested or something.
Distress. Yep.
Right. Or so woodpeckers will not come towards that. And then the other, it also makes predatory sounds.
Right.
So the woodpeckers avoid the noises.
Yeah.
Well, I've seen those in action, and they do work.
Yeah.
I can vouch for it. The one we bought works beautifully.
You could just make a recording of your shotgun. I mean, that would work too, right?
It's tough to get the same decibel level.
Well, yeah. Mark, with the combination of the shotgun and the recordings and the mirrors, your place has got to be kind of interesting. And to reiterate,
no birds were injured in the making of Mark's phone call.
No birds were ever injured. But the great thing is, they still live in our woods. They just know to avoid the house.
I can't blame them.
Yeah, I'm going to avoid your house too, Mark. Thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Rosie in Albany. Yep. Rosie, you're on.
Hi, guys.
Hi there.
I just had a comment about the evolutionary question about the benefit of a bald eagle's white head.
Okay, all right.
Actually, not all traits that organisms carry on to the next generation are necessarily beneficial.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes we forget that evolution is not, it doesn't have a point, it's just random mutations.
Right.
Okay.
So sometimes a random mutation will occur that doesn't necessarily aid in an animal's survival,
mm-hmm.
but it gets passed down anyways because it also does not make an animal less fit.
Okay, makes sense. And the eagles are kind of the top dog there. So
exactly.
Yeah, okay.
So I can't remember. There's a technical term for it. I can't remember, but...
Okay, yeah. That will explain a lot of what goes on out there, like the red tail of a red-tailed hawk. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's there.
Right.
And in fact, it's interesting. Red tails on some of these larger hawks show up on very distant populations. For example, in Africa, there's an African red-tailed hawk. Looks very much like our own, but I'm sure they never met.
Very interesting.
That is interesting.
Rosie, thanks for bringing that to the table. We appreciate it. Let's go to Bill in Kingston. Bill.
Yes, hi. I have a problem. It's become a bit of a nuisance. I believe I've got 3 or 4 generations of sparrows that are hanging in my carport. And someone told me that sparrows will return to the site where they're born to nest again in succeeding generations. Is that true?
Well, most birds will do that, yes.
And, most birds, just sparrows.
Well, not just sparrows, right. And I'm wondering, are you sure they're sparrows and not swallows?
I don't think the tail's long enough to be swallows, but I'm pretty sure they're not swallows.
Okay, good. All right.
But, you know, I kind of encouraged them. I didn't disrupt them, like, for a few years. And, like, I started with, like, one nesting pair, it seemed. The next thing I knew, I had another one next year. And then the year after, I had 3 or 4. And now I'm up to, like, at least 8 to 10 that are sort of like a mini flock.
Yeah.
And they just hang. And it's, you know, I didn't want to try to disrupt them. And, of course, they're way past nesting and birth season and raising their young now. But they're kind of like, is there a safe way to get rid of them or just like to discourage them to maybe move on?
Well, you might invite Steve over to your house.
Mark. Mark. Yeah, that's the guy. Yeah. You know, I think that's probably not the best idea.
Yeah. The possibility would be, is it possible to close your car, you know, the garage?
No, it's an open carport. I have a lattice on one side and the other sides are all open. And I've got these deep eaves like up at the top of the beams, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've made their nests in each respective 4 corners of the carport, and I did clean the nests out just a short time ago to see if that might discourage them coming back, but they're back. They sort of disappeared for about a month this summer, and they hooked up with a whole bunch of other ones down the street and hung out some edges on another person's property.
The eight or ten
that are sort of, you know, used to being here at my carport are back.
Well, I've seen what some people have done with the same problem with pigeons, and that is to put up a mesh, like a mesh ceiling, that will keep them from getting up into that eave area.
Okay, so would that be like just like a wire mesh or burlap? Or
it could be either. It could be a wire mesh, okay. Would be whichever is comfortable for you. In other words, some sort of a barrier that would separate them from that a roosting and nesting area that they found.
All right.
Okay.
Well, Bill, go ahead real quickly.
Yeah, is there anything like the smell thing that would do it, like mothballs or something like
that? No, that wouldn't work at all. Birds don't rely on smell for any of their functions.
Oh, I see. Okay, so that's not going to do it. Yeah. All right, thank you for the advice. I'll give it a try.
Give it a try, Bill.
Let us know how you did. Let's go to Marianne. Hi, Marianne.
Hello, how are you, Ray?
Good.
I have a question that I hope Rich will solve for me.
All right.
I've had a bird, I've heard it twice, in the bush next to my house. Now, I'm a birder, but bird sounds will confuse me. And this bird sat there, and are you ready, Rich?
Ready.
Here's the sound.
Right, here we go.
It said, chirky, chirky, chirky. Sounded like a little bird.
And when was this?
In the fall and then in the spring.
And it was a little guy.
It sounded like a little guy.
Okay. A real little guy that will make a sound very similar to that would be a young goldfinch that has that little two-note, and it's and they are late risers, let's say. They nest late in the season,
right.
And
the
young are dependent well into the beginning of autumn months. And they have that little sweet little sound that they make.
Well, this wasn't real sweet. It was... I'm going to sit in the bush and drive you crazy kind of sound. But it was...
It seems to be working.
Yeah, so it's not that much of a journey. But it just was churchy, churchy.
And you're sure it was a bird, not an insect?
Or a person.
Yeah.
Or a person.
Because by the time I got out there, everything flew out of the bush. And
Wow.
Uh-huh.
And,
So you've stumped Rich, yes? No?
Yeah.
You're pretty sure it's a young goldfinch?
I'm not. That's
well, the other thing
thought
I
that
wondered,
comes to mind.
I've had Carolina wrens pass through once in a while, and I wondered if it would have been a Carolina wren.
Well, they you know, one of the colloquial names for Carolina wren is mocker wren, because they do have a way of imitating other birds, well, not imitating them, but have a wide variety of sounds that they can make. And you're right about that. That could be a possibility. And, you know, this one got hooked on a tune. You know how you get a tune that rolls around in your head through the day?
It's like that Call Me Maybe song. No, nothing.
Okay.
The kids like it, Rich. You don't need to know that.
Okay. And so let's go with that. Seek it out some more. Either Goldfinch or Carolina Wren. And you're probably right. I'll put my money on your Carolina Wren.
Marianne, thank you so much. You're the last caller today. We really appreciate it. And sorry to Judy and Peter and John who didn't get through. But thanks to everybody who called in. And I love those bird calls.
Yeah.
Stump the band.
You know, they're good.
Yeah.
The observations. People are really good out there. The Eagles observations and the like.
All right. One more time. Really your contact info, Rich, and then we'll get out of here.
It's Gaeltic at capital.net. GAELTIC@capital.net.
Mr. Guthrie, splendid job, and we will see you next month. Support for Vox Pop comes from Best Cleaners, pickup and delivery throughout the capital region from Saratoga to Bethlehem. LookYourBest.com. The American Hotel in Sharon Springs, New York, serving dinner Thursday through Sunday, beginning at 5 p.m. on Sunday, brunch from 8 to 2 at afternoon meals, 11:30 to 4, AmericanHotelNY.com. Tom Wall Photography, specializing in a contemporary photojournalistic approach to weddings and portraits for the entire WAMC listening area, TomWallPhotography.com. Hudson Opera House, presenting the Bryant Park Quartet, violins, viola, and cello, with works by John Adams, Brahms, and Haydn, Saturday, October 20th, 8 p.m., HudsonOperaHouse.org. Thanks to Zach Malloy for a splendid job at the controls. Christy Carton answered our calls today. And our producer is Patrick Donges. I'm Ray Graff. Moyers & Company airs tomorrow on Medical Monday next week. Dr. Sankar Varanasi of the Hudson Valley Heart Center. Stay tuned now for a news update.